Hello, I'm Alison Carlin. I'm half of the founders of BachTrack. We started the site 7 years ago as a concert finder for the UK. We then decided to add reviews to the site and got some people, we'll talk about it later, able to write reviews of concerts that were edited professionally in-house. We're now publishing articles too. We're publishing reviews in English and now French and German. And we get 120,000 unique visitors a month on the site, people who want to go and find concerts, opera and dance to see. I'm in the very fortunate position of speaking to orchestras across the world most days of the week. And that puts us in a very, very interesting position of knowing what's going on in many areas of the world, although less so in South America, who we've not really made contact with so far. We're going to add the languages of Spanish and Italian in early 2015, and so we'll be taking on and reviewers in both Spain and Latin America, and hopefully at some point early this evening, those of you who might be interested in helping us find those reviewers could come and speak to me. I'm going to hand over to David, who's my co-founder and is the technical whiz behind BachTrack, which is really making some major changes to how people find concerts and how people read about them online. Thank you.
So, as Joaquin said, this is the practical part of the day. So you're going to see a lot more text for me, and I'm really going to try to tell you a little bit in the second half of the talk about practical things that you can do. But I'm going to start by telling you a little bit about what we do and how it works and how we got here. So we start, firstly, we are strictly in classical music. In opera and dance, so that makes us a very specialist site, not a general publication at all. We started as just a database of concerts with concert listings. And the reason for this is we really think the most fundamental thing, if you want to get audience, is to tell them when your concerts are and what is playing in a way that is really easy for them to find, so that if they are a fan of Albéniz, they can find where Albéniz is playing around the world. If they are in a particular city on a particular date, they can find out what the concerts are on. And as we'll see in a moment, people travel. So that was the single most important thing. And we now list, at any time, there are about 12,000 dates in our database around the world. And we're very happy to be working with EOS since this year. So you will see that most of the orchestral concerts in Spain are on the site. Because we get to list so much, we now publish annual statistics from the industry. So Doug showed this morning that Baltimore were doing a list of what were the most played composers in their orchestra. Well, we can do that for the whole world. We do it every January, and you'll see in the early weeks of January those statistics being published. One of the things that is super important is presenting information, the important information, in a concentrated way. So this is what our concert finder looks like. And you can see that in a relatively small amount of space, it shows all of the important things about these concerts. So who's performing, what the main works are, where it is, when it is. What you'll also see is that on the gray bar along the top, you can choose any way you want of searching for this. So if I'm looking for Beethoven, I can find Beethoven. If I'm looking for Spain, I can find Spain. If I want to combine those things, I can do that. So this is organized from the point of view of the visitor. It's not from the point of view of the way we think about it. And because of our work with AOS, I felt I had to show this slide to show how many regions and cities of Spain we have concerts in. So, although we started as a concert finder, what we found very early on is that on the internet, search engines are powerful. And search engines have strange ways of deciding what content is important. They were essentially designed in the days when everything on the web was a scientific publication, and they kind of still think it is. And the only way that we could attract traffic was to start creating real content, so we started publishing reviews. And by now, the site is kind of half reviews, half listings. We're publishing over 200 reviews a month in 33 countries last year. That's more than anybody else. We have our own style. So our reviews are written by people who are really knowledgeable about music. They are not professional journalists. We can't actually afford to pay them. But they usually either they have a musicology degree, or they are performers, or in some cases, they are enthusiasts with no musical training, but who have been going to concerts for 30 years. However, we edit every review in-house professionally. And for our younger authors, we spend a lot of time helping them to write better. And we demand a particular voice. We demand that our authors are knowledgeable, that they are an authority on what they're writing. They understand the music. We demand that they are enthusiastic. They choose what concerts they go to see. We want them to see concerts that they are predisposed to enjoy, because there is no point in going to a concert by a composer you don't like and coming away and then writing a review saying, I really don't like this composer's music. It's a pointless thing. And so really the summary is that line at the bottom. Don't be boring and don't be rude. Write something that makes the reader feel like they were at that concert. The other thing that's notable about our reviews is that they are longer than the typical review in a newspaper. So our guideline is 600 to 800 words. And these days, the review on the right there is a sort of typical recent review from El País. Newspapers are 300 to 400 words. Actually, for a serious concert, and particularly for a serious opera, I don't think it's possible to write an authoritative review in 300 words. You just don't have enough space. The other trend in the press, as Doug mentioned this morning, is that newspapers are getting rid of their music journalists, or particularly their classical music journalists, even their popular music. The coverage is becoming much more celebrity gossip and much less about the music. And the effect is that the main newspapers aren't quite sure what to make about criticism. There is a debate about what the role of the critic is and who should be criticizing, because it is becoming clear that the best writers online, particularly somebody who is writing about a composer that they have a specialist knowledge of, are at least as expert writers about music as professional journalists, and in some cases, really very much more so. So if you want to see in graphs the effect that is happening and why we exist, really, look at the curve of internet usage and compare that. I'm afraid I only had figures for the UK for newspaper circulation. But there are two things that really strike me from that graph, from this graph. The first is that newspaper circulation was never all that high in the first place. And the second is that even in Spain, which is a little bit behind certainly the UK and Scandinavia, we've now had 10 years where the internet is reaching more people than the number of copies of a newspaper sold. So to be fair, more people read the newspapers than the number of copies sold. But even so, you can see the direction in which everything is going, and Spain may not have reached the same level as the rest of Europe yet, but it's going to. The next thing that we've done that's interesting, that we think is very innovative on the site, is what I call, I'm sorry, it's a tech word, it's the portal system. They tend to get described as home pages, and the idea is that everything on the site has a home page. So almost the page about Beethoven that you see there becomes a microsite about Beethoven. It's got the latest reviews of Beethoven concerts. It's got the events that are coming up with a link to the main Finder page. It's got some facts about him. It's got a calendar, and it can have many different things. Anything on the site can have a homepage. So there's a homepage for Spain. There can be a homepage for any concert hall. There can be a homepage for Juan Diego Flores. There can be a homepage for Baroque music. There can be a homepage for anything. And because we are a very small organization, we have 10 people in total, we're using the technology to create many of these homepages automatically. So there's a lot of attention being paid to what's called data tagging, and essentially the information on the site organizes itself to create these pages which are of special interest to people who come to the site. Always the question on web businesses is, how do you monetize them? What we do is called, in the US at least, is called freemium. So the basic site is free. Nobody pays to read reviews. Nobody pays to find listings. Actually, even basic input is free if you are a small chamber music organization and you have 5 concerts. You can put them on the site and it won't cost you anything. And where we make our money is for larger organizations. We sell them packages where they have better listings. So the listings will have a picture. Crucially, those listings will have a link through to the orchestra's own site for being able to book tickets online directly. And we also make them stand out a little bit more with images and so on. That's part of the offering. What is happening with the press is also that there is an increasing amount of advertorial content. So we will write articles about people when we're paid to do so. So I'm going to move on quickly and just give you a little bit of advice for your own websites. We get to see a lot of websites, and I hope this is useful. The first thing is, do what we do. Make it easy for people to find out what's on. That's the single biggest thing you can do. Make it useful for people to buy tickets. Make it possible. And then add more content as and when you can and when you have it. The presentation will be available, and I've been told I'm short of time, so I'm going to skip through these. There are a lot of serious, simple mistakes that people make on their websites. I'm just going to focus on the one at the bottom because it's a way of thinking, and it's that people will organize their websites according to the cycle they're in, because it's your own internal administrative organization. That's the way you think about it as an orchestra, so that's the way you present it. But that is not the way a person thinks about it. Look at this website of BR Classic. That's where you get to. Now, just imagine yourself a concert goer in Munich, and you're interested in finding a concert. That page tells you nothing. Now, look at the website on the left. It has a terrible color scheme, but it is fantastic on information. It shows you everything you need to know about what the London Symphony Orchestra are playing, and you can book straight through. So be practical. The other thing is, I've got the figures for you, 70% of people in developed countries use smartphones. Make your website use on a smartphone, work on a smartphone. Three examples here. The one on the left is the Chicago Symphony Orchestra, who have a really nice, perfectly good website, but it's not optimized for mobile. The site in the middle is the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra, showing you how to do it right and having the most important things visible really clearly. And then I have no idea what the Orchestre Philharmonique de Radio France thought they were doing on the website on the right, but they need to deal with it. I'm going to skip this slide because I'm running out of time. There are some things I was going to say about web marketing. The important one here, get control over your ticket sales so you can measure them. You need to know where your ticket buyers are coming from on the web, because that is essential in telling you how to advertise. You cannot run a modern marketing campaign without knowing what is actually driving your ticket sales. And the other key thing about web marketing is, with print marketing, people receive your data when you decide, which is not, in principle, when they are thinking about which concert to go to. With web marketing, they receive your information when they decide, and it works better. The other really big message I would like you to take away is that there are two people, sorts of people in the world. There are the people in your city who know your orchestra, and there is everyone else. You are very good at marketing to the people in your city on your mailing list who are your regular subscribers and who know your orchestra. There's nothing I need to tell you about marketing to them. You're fine. Your problem is with everybody else, and everybody else is a huge opportunity. Spain is the world number three tourist destination. 40% of tourists travel for cultural reasons. You have this audience which is waiting to come to your events. Use it. There are a couple of things that I'm just going to skip over. This first one. One of the difficult things online is to find things that are fun and different. It's important to find your online voice, which is different from your formal, starchy, old-fashioned voice of old. You need a voice which is more conversational, which is more engaged with the way the younger people want to relax. So this one I'm going to play in full. I know I'm out of time, but it's too good. And this is another example from an American basketball. But this is the Cleveland Orchestra figuring out how to access the majority of fans in their city by getting together with their basketball team to create the music that was played at the beginning of each game. So I'm going to leave you with this. If we have some audio. Can we have some audio? If that doesn't engage with a typical classical music ignorant American teenager, I have no idea what will. And you have some good sports teams in the city, I seem to remember. So here are just three thoughts for you in Spanish, which I hope is not too terrible. And thank you for listening.